there's a perception amongst investors that buying rent-controlled properties which have depressed rent rolls because those rents have not been allowed to go to market is a bad investment. Mm. And I say, oh, no, 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 that's a good investment. You're never going to have a vacancy.
Right.
And the value can only go up because ultimately, no matter what, rents will rise because they have to rise.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Larry Taylor is the founder and chief executive officer of Christina. He is a seasoned investor with over 48 years of real estate experience in the West Side region of Los Angeles. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hello there, and how are you?
I'm great, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing really great, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
The pleasure is all mine, Larry. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
I'm a self-made, self-starter. Started as a USC junior. I was a scholarship student. I formed my first real estate company while I was a student. The premise of that was to buy real estate in the west side of Los Angeles during the Nixon wage and price level freeze. And today we're doing the same thing in the same location.
Wow. Most people, I would assume, maybe I'm wrong, but you know, the strategies shift over the years, or the asset classes or the types shift. I mean, doing the same thing in the same location for 48 years, it sounds like you guys have either just gone really, really niche, or I've just found a gold mine and just don't want to leave it. What's the story there?
Well, the West Side region of Los Angeles is like the Permian Basin is to oil. It's drilling oil in a proven field.
Okay.
It's fully developed. It's highly desirable. It has the best year-round climate in the United States, has the highest concentration of millionaires and billionaires in the world. It's the center of tourism, center of entertainment, center of technology, two busiest ports in the United States. I could go on and on, but if you're drilling oil in a proven field, you're always going to hit oil.
Right, right. I mean, a lot of things have changed. I think maybe you said this off air, maybe we said this at the beginning of this recording. I'm not quite sure which one it was, but I think you said you guys formed your company in September of 1977.
That's correct.
A lot of things have changed in your region, I would think in particular, both socially, regulatory-wise. I mean, a lot of things have kind of come down the pipe that have made a lot of people kind of steer away from California. I know you just mentioned at least 10 reasons, I think, right off the top of your head as to why what you're doing is the right time, the right place to be there. But kind of give us, if you can, some of the history of how some of those changes have come about, and then how they've affected the way you guys have done business.
Well, first of all, California is a huge state.
Yeah.
California, the economy of California, if it was a separate country, would be the sixth largest economy in the world. There's a world of difference in California, where the northern part of California doesn't resemble the southern part. It's a very, very huge area, and Los Angeles is a very, very huge geographical community. And so when people talk about California, you might as well be talking about South America, or you might as well just talk about Western Europe. I mean, California is a huge and diverse state, which is, you know, larger than most countries. And so when people talk about California, I don't know what they're talking about, because I can only talk to you about the 100 square miles of the West Side region of Los Angeles. I don't know anything about the rest of California.
Got it. Very good. But can you give us a little insight maybe as to kind of the way the regulatory environment has shaped the way you guys do business, if it has at all?
Well, of course it has. And it's constantly, regulations are are constantly at being enacted, reenacted, revised. And that's just not just Los Angeles or just California, it's the entire United States. So the regulatory environment is, you know, again, it creates opportunities. If you look at it strategically, it's the regulatory environment that creates opportunities rather than acts to, you know, restrict opportunities.
Can you give some insight?
Sure. For example, a couple of years ago, California passed Assembly Bill 330, which ultimately became Assembly Bill SB 8, which basically was designed to stimulate the creation of housing because the state of California is generally considered to be lacking of housing. So this was an idea that was passed by the state legislature to encourage housing in all the communities in California. However, there was an exception that was added very, very last minute to that bill, which said, yes, we want to accelerate the ability to build housing by eliminating local restrictions or being able to expedite local restrictions, unless what you're going to do is remove existing affordable rent-controlled housing, in which case, if you remove something that's already rent-controlled or restricted in some fashion, and you decide to build something on that site, you have to bring back that which you removed at the same rents or less than what they were when you removed them. What that does is it takes away all of the incentive to remove existing rent control house. So you can't really remove it. What happens is if it can't be removed, it can only become more valuable. So in a sense, while everybody's saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this new regulation, which was designed to stimulate housing, I'm saying is all that did was it may stimulate the growth of housing in areas where there isn't already housing, but where there is protected housing, it is now protected from demolition into perpetuity, which means no more competition. So if you have a fully developed area and all of these properties are protected, and nobody will ever come in and tear them down and build new, that which exists can only become more valuable because the demand exceeds the supply. So in that situation, regulation actually made a rent-controlled property more valuable.
Which I think entirely, I mean, that's altogether, I mean, it's unique, you know, in the concept itself. But let's assume maybe that you aren't the one holding those properties. How does that, how can that situation be made advantageous for an investor looking to get into that market?
Well, it's advantageous because there's a perception amongst investors that buying rent-controlled properties which have depressed rent rolls because those rents have not been allowed to go to market is a bad investment. Mm. And I say, oh, no, that's a good investment. You're never going to have a vacancy. And the value can only go up because ultimately, no matter what, rents will rise because they have to rise. Period.
Right. They have to. And is that what you guys are? Let me ask this a different way. What are you guys specifically focusing on then? Are you guys building new? Or are you buying existing assets? Like what's your core focus?
Our core focus is to buy existing properties from people that need to sell, not from people that want to sell. And we are not property specific. We are property agnostic, location specific. We like street retail, for example. That's been one of our primary property types that we focus on. We like pedestrian oriented street retail property. That's one of our hallmarks. We're not really specialist in any one particular property type because rent is rent, space is space. Doesn't really matter as long as you're buying in the right location. Location has been around We've all grown up with location, location, location. They never said apartments, apartments, apartments only.
Right.
Or they never said only the southern five states, Miami, Florida, Arizona, Texas, right? No, it's always been location, location, location. And there aren't that many locations in any one particular state or country that are investable. And what I mean by investable is where development is restricted, demand exceeds supply, and the entry barrier is very, very high. Those are the components that add to success in investing in real estate. There's very few places in the United States or any country that are investable.
Right.
Period.
That's wild. I love that. So you mentioned there, you said asset kind of agnostic, and you want to find people that need to sell, not want to sell. Why are people needing to sell in today's environment?
In any environment, there's always death. Okay. And, you know, for anybody that has a net worth of over 12 or 13 million, they have to pay estate taxes. So if they have a portfolio of real estate, they have to sell the real estate to pay the estate tax. So death, divorce, bankruptcy, foreclosure, partnership disputes, there's always something like that happening, particularly in a vast environment like the 100 square miles of the West Side region of Los Angeles. There's always, I like to say it, there's always someone dying.
There is.
As long as it's not me.
that's a good idea. I like that. Yeah. So in being market or I guess asset agnostic, how do you effectively weed through the, I mean, there's got to be just a ton of property coming across your guys' desk. How do you weed through that and actually find the assets that are worth pursuing?
Well, when you've been on the ground in the same location for nearly 50 years, they find you.
Hmm.
Number one, if it's listed for sale, it's retail. We're not interested.
Sure.
Okay. So, but they find us. We have a long track record of performance, certainty of performance to people who need to sell is more important than price.
Can you clarify that?
Yeah. If you need to pay your estate taxes 9 months from the date of death, okay, you're going to be more focused on selling a property to somebody who definitely is going to be able to close and provide you with the money that you need to pay your taxes.
Yep.
So, I mean, certainty of performance is what comes from companies that have track records within a given geographical location of performance.
How have you guys adjusted your portfolio over the years? I mean, I know you said, you know, the finding the assets that are, it sounds like off market assets, finding people that need to sell, you're not necessarily asset specific, but I would imagine, I mean, you guys have gone through the savings and loan crisis, you've gone through the dot-com bust, you went through the GFC, I mean, you went through COVID, you guys have seen all sorts of incredible market shifts. I mean, that's a wild ride to have gone through the last 50 years. How have you changed or repositioned your portfolio accordingly along the way, if at all?
Well, we did change about 10 years ago in response to changes in the tax law and changes in the securities law brought about by the Jobs Act. It became very clear for real estate investors to be able to benefit from the tax treatment, they had to be able to own multiple properties because the depreciation and amortization deductions, which are non-cash deductions, which allows an owner of real property to actually earn a positive income, but after tax report a loss,
right.
Those losses are suspended for most property owners, unless they own other properties that are producing income, which they can use to offset, they can use the losses to offset the income. So what we did was we formed private equity companies. And we said, we'll have one company that will buy 10 properties. And we will allow our investors to invest in the company by owning an interest in the company. They'll own an interest in 10 properties. And then as properties are throwing off income, other properties are throwing off losses, and therefore they'll be able to use the losses within the portfolio and not have to pay tax. So, and then we set it up as a private equity company, because a private equity company basically says, don't expect great results in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth year. Real estate is a long term. Most of our real estate partnerships when we were syndicators had a 30-year to 35-year term.
Wow.
So our private equity companies on average have a 30-year term. Now, if you're lucky enough to own great real estate, the smartest thing that you can do is having purchased it. The dumbest thing you can do is ever selling it. My only regret in the last 50 years is having ever sold anything.
Wow.
So the government rewards you to keep it, and the government penalizes you by taxation to sell it. So, you know, in the typical investor mind, which is different than the real estate mind, which is, how much am I investing? How much am I going to get back? What's my cash flow? When am I going to get my money back? That works for stocks. That works for bonds. Maybe that works for businesses. Works for a lot of things. It does not work for real estate. Real estate is buying the best property in the best location at the lowest possible price and mining it for all of the tax benefits and the appreciation and value creation, because the government rewards you by allowing you to continue to make money, build value, and never pay tax. That's what makes real estate work.
I love it. That's extremely clear. I want to kind of circle back to your greatest regret is selling it comment, and maybe tie that back into the 30 to plus year hold that you guys project on this. What type of investor gets in, and how do you attract that investor? I mean, you know, we've got a fund right now that's an 8-year fund, and people are like, oh, 8 years, that's a long time. And I'm like, I don't think it's that long. So obviously it sounds really short compared to what you just said at 30 plus years. How do you attract capital that is looking at a 30 plus year hold?
Well, there's all forms of capital throughout the world. There's all forms of investors who have different strategies and different requirements, but ownership of real estate is something that's been around longer than human beings. And so, I mean, real estate has been around longer. And once you own something and you extract value, for example, if you own a property that you purchased for X amount of dollars, call it $10 million, right? And over a 20-year period, it becomes worth $35 million. And you originally invested $5 million and borrowed $5 million. And then over the first 10 years, you earned $3 million in operating income, but in the 10th year, you had an opportunity to put a $15 million loan on the property, but you only paid 10 and you only had 5 in, but you got 3 out. Now you have a loan for $15 million. You get 3 times or 4 times your money out tax-free. And the interest that you pay is deductible at the property level as an operating expense. Now, 5 more years let go down, and now the property is worth $30 million. And you have a financing opportunity to borrow $20 million. So you pay off your $15 million, put another $5 million in your pocket, and you still own the property. You still pay no tax.
Right.
Then when you finally die and you have already set up your estate plan, that asset goes to your beneficiaries at a stepped up basis so that they pay little or no tax when they sell the property. You may have an estate tax issue, but in our structure, where you only own a portion with other investors in that private equity company, if you're transferring to your beneficiaries a percentage interest in, let's say, 10 properties that are owned in this private equity company, the government allows you to apply a discounted value up to 35%. So let's say 15 years after you made an investment in one of our private equity companies and you invested $10 million, and now that $10 million is worth $20 million, right? You can leave it to your beneficiaries at like 16. Okay, so real estate has been the greatest form of wealth creation ever. Okay, and I don't discount the stock market, and I don't discount the S&P 500 and so on and so forth, but those investments do not offer the tax benefits that the government gives to real estate. And there's a reason for that, because stimulating real estate stimulates the economy. So the government is always looking for ways to get people to invest in real estate because it is illiquid.
Right.
You can wake up in the morning and sell a stock. You can wake up in the morning and sell a bond. You can wake up in the morning and sell out a mutual fund. You can't wake up in the morning and say, oh, I'm going to sell my building in 30 minutes. Okay. So again, but when the government stimulates real estate, it employs a lot of people. When there's construction, it puts together a lot of people that are working, architects, engineers, plumbers, electricians, carpet manufacturers, furniture makers. I'm saying is the way to stimulate an economy is always to stimulate real estate. And that's been going on in this country for the last 100 years. So real estate still is the most significant beneficiary of the government's largesse.
Undoubtedly. Larry, I've got one, maybe two final questions here for you. I've certainly enjoyed your insights. I love your enthusiasm, what you bring to the table. I mean, you guys have done some really, really cool things. And I love just how you've hyper-focused in one very, very specific part of the country there in the west side of Los Angeles. But maybe give me this insight, if you can. What's the favorite part of your business now? And then where are you guys going?
My favorite part of the business right now, of course, is growing Christina Real Estate Investors and opening up Christina Real Estate Investors to more and more participants across the United States, because the Jobs Act allows us now to market the opportunity to invest to people in 50 states.
Right.
Whereas before we were limited, very, very limited to just California. So that is very exciting. And the other thing that's exciting is, as the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates 11 times consecutively in the last couple of years to rates that we haven't seen in more than 22 years, it's creating a lot of what I call finance stress on very, very good properties. And so we might start to see for the first time, we're starting to see some investors who bought in the last 20 years or 15 or 10, particularly in the last five, that might be willing to throw in the towel, because if they borrowed at 3 and they have to reborrow at 7 and the lender is saying, we need you to pay down the loan, they might be more willing to sell the property at a discount. So we're starting to see some pretty good properties become available at some very attractive prices. So between the growth of our investor base coming from 50 states and the potential to have that unlimited, and the ability to buy great real estate. But like I said, staying within the 100 square miles of the West Side region of Los Angeles, it's a bigger location. It's a bigger geographical area than Manhattan. And wouldn't you love to own Manhattan? Some of the biggest titans in real estate will tell you that they've made their greatest fortunes only owning real estate in Manhattan. So I mean, like, this is our vision, which is, you know, own the best, forget the rest.
I love it. Larry, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I certainly appreciate it. I've enjoyed having you, and I've learned an absolute ton from you. I think what you guys have done and sound like we'll continue to do is inspiring. So thank you very much for that. If our listeners want to get in touch with Christina, what is the best way to do that?
Go on our website. It's very, very friendly. It'll immediately direct you to our company just by filling out a few things and giving us your information, and you'll get an immediate response.
Fantastic. And for those of you who are just listening, that website is Christina, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, ChristinaLA.com. That's ChristinaLA.com. And Larry, thank you again for your time today. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I appreciated the opportunity. I hope your audience enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.